Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. Very excited to be with you here today, along with Chris Garrett, to talk about how to set up and manage your Rainmaker blog. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hello, everybody.
All right, so this session begins our blogging as content marketing section of the Rainmaker site building roadmap. So that's what we'll be talking about over the next four sessions. We'll have two webinars, two Q&As, the normal schedule, and this first session is called How to Set Up and Manage Your Rainmaker Blog. And so I want to begin this session with a question. All right, and here's that question for you because, before we even get into the actual mechanics of setting up your blog, it's important to reflect on a question that Rafal asked us to ask ourselves back in the design session that we did a couple of weeks back, and that is, with content, we can't really effectively talk about our design without understanding what our content is going to be. And it's very hard to set up a blog and figure out how everything on our site is going to be laid out with in respect to content until we understand what our content strategy is. And so that is my question for you here this morning, and it's more of a rhetorical question than anything, although if you want to drop us a note and let us know in the question box, certainly we'd love to read your answer. But what is your content marketing strategy? And the reason why this is such an important question is because of what the research and the data has shown when it comes to actually having a documented content marketing strategy. So the first step, of course, is to at least understand this mentally, to have thought about it. The next step, even better, is to document it. And a couple of bullet points from a recent article that Brian Clark posted in his content strategy series that he's been writing on Copyblogger, and this relates back to some research that Content Marketing Institute did. But you're going to be far more likely to consider yourself effective at content marketing when you understand your strategy and have documented it. You will feel significantly less challenged by every aspect of content marketing when you know your strategy and document it. You will also generally consider yourself more effective in your use of all content marketing tactics and social media channels, and you will be able to justify spending a higher percentage of your marketing budget on content marketing. So, for all of those reasons and many more, it's important to understand this and to understand what your answer is to this question. And I do want to offer up some resources for you that if you haven't already taken advantage of them, I highly recommend them. So if you go to rainmakerplatform.com/content-strategy, I put together the links of Brian's five article series that he kicked off 2017 with about getting back to the basics of content strategy. They're all excellent articles in their own right. They walk you through how to be very intentional in defining and setting up your content strategy. And so if you haven't had a chance yet to check out those articles, they're all linked right there. Again, that is rainmakerplatform.com/content-strategy. And Chris, one more slide on this before we get into the tutorials of how to actually, set this up with Rainmaker. But let's just give a brief overview of a general content marketing strategy. And folks who have been on webinars with us before may have seen this graphic that we have up here. But can you touch briefly on the concepts of attraction, retention, and conversion, which is what we're trying to achieve with a content marketing strategy?
Yeah, so this is business blogging as content marketing. So there are other approaches, but this is what we use as a company and what Jared and I personally do. And attraction, retention, and conversion means you hit all the major points that you need to in the customer's buyer's journey. And the reason why it's laid out like this is because it's a flow. It goes from somebody not knowing anything about you through to warming up to you and then converting at the end and actually becoming a customer. But actually, we also represent it as a cycle. And when we go into the next webinar, when we talk about attracting and converting people into subscribers and converting them into customers, we'll go into more detail about that. But at the top here, we've got the attraction strategy. So you need attraction content, you need attraction mechanisms. So we don't talk about driving traffic so much as attracting visitors, because they're human beings with interests that you need to connect with. Driving traffic sounds like a cattle rancher, right? It sounds like you're pushing people, but you're actually magnetically attracting them. So we need to pull people from offline and online spaces. So offline, it might be word of mouth referrals, it might be doing in-person workshops, attending events, speaking at events, and going to meetups. It might be print advertising and print articles. And online, you've got your forums, you've got your social media, other people's blogs, holding webinars, being an interviewee, interviewing people, and writing online articles. And that's attraction, because content is the currency of the web. It's what is shared in social media. It's what people click on. So you need that content. So you create content that attracts people. But specifically, you want to work out who your most wanted prospects are and track them with their needs, their interests that overlap with your expertise. So we get people to come to your blog, and then hopefully we get them to come back, and that's your retention. So you need to attract people from search engines, from clicking links, from social media, wherever they come from, but they need to be attracted by your knowledge and your expertise. And so when we say we're attracting people to our blog, we're attracting people to our articles, and that's a vital difference. Most people don't actually come to the homepage of your website. They come to a piece of content that has been shared by somebody else or shared by you, and they click through to it. So each page of your website, each article on your blog needs to be its own landing page and get people onto the email list. And those are the prospects. That's your biggest asset. So in future, you don't have to do that work. They're already in your list. You can just email your list and you can get that attention again. But you need to keep them happy. You need to give them an incentive. And then hopefully, as they warm up to you and they realize that you've got expertise that's going to help them, it moves to the conversion phase where you've got a product sequence. So you might have a small, medium, and large. You might have an introductory product. You might have a bigger product and then something to upsell them to. So you need to cross-sell and upsell and get them onto a buyer's list, an email list about customers. So that's the content marketing strategy in a nutshell. And as I said, we're going to go into it deeper over future webinars. But right now what we're talking about is building the foundations, that platform that you can build upon, which is going to help you have a home base where all your activities like social media, YouTube, interviews you do, articles you do, guest posts you do, it's all going to lead back to this central hub so you can capture their interest, warm them up, and hopefully convert a percentage of them into customers. I'll rattle through that. Hopefully it makes sense.
No, that was great. Thank you, Chris. And like you said, we're going to be talking about this part right here in the center over these next couple of sessions, your blog. And so here's the Blogging is Content Marketing series. So today we're talking about how to set up and manage your Rainmaker blog. We'll have a Q&A on the topics that we discussed today. And then webinar 2 in 2 weeks will be how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. So if you have questions about that, you know, about opt-ins and that kind of thing, we will be covering that in webinar number 2. So we'll cover all of this over these next 2 sessions with Q&As after each one. In terms of the roadmap for today's session, as we move through how to set up and manage your Rainmaker blog, here are the topics that we're going to tackle today. So we're going to talk about sidebars, or maybe no sidebars, but how you set those up, how you set up your content areas, how you create and manage your categories and your tags, as well as comments, plus some other content settings that you will want to be aware of in Rainmaker. How you easily add social sharing buttons to your Rainmaker blog pages, and then some basic pages that you want to make sure that you have set up and ready to go when you're ready to start blogging. So, without further ado, let's hop right in here to the tutorial part of the presentation, and let's start out by talking about sidebars. And of course, the question to answer is, do you want to have a sidebar? Because there has obviously been a movement in part led by Brian Gardner, one of our colleagues here at Rainmaker Digital, where some sites, you know, for simplicity's sake, for minimalism's sake, do not have a sidebar. And so you want to make that choice for if you want one or not. And for some really good insight on how to make that decision, I recommend you go back if you haven't listened to those sessions on design with Rafal. Definitely take a look at those. But I think certainly if your long-term plan is to, you know, do something with a membership site, to have an LMS, you know, there are a lot of reasons to have a sidebar on your site. And so you just want to make sure that you are intentional as you make that decision. Now, the first step that you are going to want to take once you do make that decision is you want to choose your default layout. And most of the themes that you can choose in Rainmaker will give you the option to have a sidebar or to not have a sidebar. And so what you want to do to choose this is go to Settings and click on Design. And then the very first option in your design settings is Site Layout. And so this is what is typical, is you have an option for a sidebar on the right, you have an option for a sidebar on the left, or you have the option for no sidebar. And this will be the default. So your posts and pages, they will be set to this by default. Now you can override it on an individual page basis, but it's obviously easier to set your default to be the one that you're going to use most often. So make your choice right here. And then again, you can override that default layout for individual posts and pages. And so I want to show you how to do that because, you know, like Chris said, I mean, you have to think of your pages as landing pages, every single page. Because if someone comes from social media, if they come from search engines, wherever they come from, whether that's their first time there or their 15th time there, there should be some kind of call to action on that page for what you want them to do. And so, again, that the goal of one page may work better without a sidebar, and the goal of another page may work better with a sidebar. So you want to be able to have that granular control, and you want to be intentional about it, and you do have that. So obviously there are a couple different ways that you can get to a post or a page. You can add a new one, and to do that, you just click here for Add New, or you can go to pages that are already created. And if you do that, just edit a page that is already created. And I created a test post that we can use for purposes of demonstration here. And so either way, that will bring you to the post edit page. And so if you scroll down, the layout settings are typically right underneath the content area where you enter your content. And so you can select the layout for this particular page. So the default option, obviously, is the default layout that you chose in design settings. But if you want to vary from that, then you can choose one of these three options right here. Choose one of those options, you'll see a subtle highlight there, so you'll know that you've chosen it. And then you want to actually choose your sidebar. So Rainmaker will give you the choice of as many different sidebars as you want to create. And so once you have gone and chosen where the sidebar will be for this particular post, go to Sidebar Selection, and then you can choose your sidebar. So you'll have a default sidebar, and that'll obviously be the one that is chosen by default, and we'll show you how to edit that here in just a minute. But if you have created any dynamic sidebars, and we'll cover the creation of dynamic sidebars in a future session, you can choose those sidebars here. So they'll all be created right there, and you can create dynamic sidebars for a number of different reasons. Like, for example, on my site, The Assembly Call, we have several different shows in addition to our post-game show. And so for each one of those shows, it has its own sidebar that has the show art for that show and different things that are particular specific to that show, and we can just choose the sidebar right here when we're going in and editing that particular page. And if you want more on dynamic sidebars right now, I would recommend the Knowledge Base article, Add a Dynamic Sidebar to Your Site. That'll give you the overview, and of course, if you have any specific questions about it, you can always ask support, and they will be able to help you out with that, and there's lots of other documentation in the knowledge base about it. But that is where you would choose your sidebar. And then, of course, it gets into content areas. And so we'll get into that in just a second, because a sidebar is only as good as the content areas that fill it. But Chris, any additional insight on sidebars, how to choose them, when to choose them?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd say is the default sidebar is going to be fine if you're just doing a blog and just fill it with the content that you want to have. The only reason I've got a different sidebar is because I have a course as my sign-up incentive. I have a robot building course. So in the course, I have the sidebar on the left, and it's all about the course. And in the blog, I've used the regular sidebar on the right, so there's a shift there. And so I set the sidebar. But for most people, one sidebar is going to be fine if it's a blog and you're not doing different things like that. And as Jared says, he's got different shows, so he has different sidebars for his shows. So don't be overwhelmed by it. It's just an option.
Yep. Alrighty, so let's talk now about content areas. And so content areas are the elements that will go into your sidebars. Okay, and so let's talk about how and where you add those. So if you click on design, you will see a link for content areas, and that will take you to the content area menu. So click that link. And then the first one that you will see is your primary sidebar. And this is going to be that default sidebar that will be up there for you. And so there are a number of available widgets here that you can add to your content areas. A number of, you know, pre-made, ready-to-go widgets. So you and I dragged, you know, several of them over here just for purposes of demonstration. But they're the ones that you would typically see in a sidebar. So you've got an opt-in form, which is perhaps the most common and useful widget that you can have in your content area. So an opt-in form, you can add a member profile, you can add recent posts, which can obviously be very useful in terms of keeping people on the site, getting them to click through to other pages on your site. You can add simple social icons, and of course you can add a simple text widget right here and put anything in there that you want, whether it's text, whether it's code, you know, anything that you want to put in there. If you're going to have ads on your site, you know, you would do that there. So you can drag and drop and move them around. So if I wanted to put recent posts at the top, I could drag that and move it up here. You got a lot of different options here. And when you click on the down arrow on any of these, it will open up a whole range of options so that you can set these content areas up properly. I'll show you a couple examples here. So, for example, the opt-in form, and this is an example of the opt-in form from Chris's site, Maker Hacks. So you see that you can define the title, you can define the text that will show before the form or after the form, you can choose your opt-in service. If you're going to use Rainmail, then you can obviously choose the Rainmail list that people would go to when they opt in. You can define your button text. So you can define all of that here, click save, and then that will automatically populate on any sidebars that you have chosen to use the primary default sidebar for. Very easy. Same thing here, you can add a member profile, so you can, you know, it'll pull in your picture, it can pull in your author bio if you want it to, number of different options there. And as I will show you in the future on my test site, I have my author box at the bottom of my post, and so you don't necessarily need to do a box in the sidebar or at the bottom of the post, but maybe you want yours at the top of the sidebar so people can see right when they get to the page as opposed to the bottom. Those are all choices that you get to make, and they will be determined in part by your content strategy and by your content and your audience and your context and your design. But, you know, obviously all of those different elements there will enter into the decision, but Rainmaker offers a lot of flexibility that will allow you to make the choice that best fits your content.
In that case, Jared, in the screenshot, that's actually a text box.
That is a text box. Okay.
Yeah. So when somebody comes to the website, I want people to know, you know, where they are, and why they should listen to me, and then they can click through to my about page. So it's just a way of orienting people and getting them to know me and be more familiar, and it's like a welcome. So it's nice, especially if you're a solo entrepreneur or solo blogger, it's nice for people to get to know you. So this is off my chrisg.com site. It's basically a single author blog. So when somebody comes to the site, it allows them to get to know me a little bit. And the good thing about having a little about box is it means that people don't have to go hunting around for it, you know, and it might be enough that little elevator pitch kind of thing might be enough for them to just think, okay, this is somebody I should listen to.
Yeah, and I think especially if you're going to use a sidebar, it can be very helpful, especially in that context. I have tended on my content pages, like on my blog pages, to go without a sidebar just because I like that as a reader, and so I tend to choose that on my sites, and so I will often use the author box at the bottom of the post. So you do lose a little bit, obviously, in the fact that the majority, you know, not everybody is going to get to the bottom of your post to see that. But to me, you gain a little bit better, clearer reader experience. So, you know, there's positives and negatives to each choice, and you just want to weigh them and make the best one that works for you. I think you could actually recreate something that looks just like this with the member profile widget, and obviously you can do it with the text widget because those are extremely versatile because they're so open-ended.
But the member profile shows who's currently logged in, so it'll be showing your profile to you.
Oh, good call. That's right. So you'd want to use that more on a membership type site.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about after entry content areas. And these are especially helpful if you're not going to have a sidebar, but they can still be very useful even if you are going to have a sidebar. And someone asked here also about, you know, the different content areas here, and, you know, front page 1 through front page 7, and this looks different for you. So the theme that you have will dictate the different default content options that are here. So the site that you're that I'm using for the test is using Altitude Pro, and Altitude Pro has 7 content areas on the front page. A different theme is going to have different content areas right here. So that's why those look different and will be different from theme to theme. But for the after entry content area, you edit this the same way that you would do the primary sidebar. And you can click this arrow here to open it up and see what widgets are in there and drag new widgets in, drag new widgets out. So a lot of times, again, an opt-in form is nice to have here after the entry. And the thinking there is if someone has made it all the way to the bottom of your post, they're probably pretty engaged. That's a pretty good indication. And so having an opt-in form down there for them to get more can be a very useful spot for it. But you can add anything that you want here to the after entry widget. And then that will show up, as it suggests, right after the entry. So here's just that very basic text widget that you saw right here. This is just default text just so that you could see where it is. And then I also will have an opt-in widget there. So you can see it, but I didn't set it up. So that's why it didn't actually populate in this screenshot right here. And then the author box is turned on or off from your profile settings. So this isn't actually a widget that you would edit in content areas, but you can turn it on or off in your author box. And I believe the first webinar that we did about the basic Rainmaker settings shows you how to turn that on or off on individual posts and on your author archive page. Now, here's the question. As we look here at the bottom of this page, it says categorized, uncategorized. Well, that's not very helpful. So let's talk next about categories. Chris, anything else to add to after entry widget or content areas before we move on?
We'll talk more about that when we talk about getting people onto email. Just remember it's an important area, like Jared said earlier. After somebody's read the article, that's what they're going to see, so it's a vital area to work on.
Yep. Okay, so let's talk about categories and tags, how you set them up, how you edit them, how you manage them. All right. So the first step is to create your categories. And again, this is going to go back to your content strategy. So I know one failing that I have had on a lot of sites that I have started is not thinking very intentionally about my categories and just kind of creating them ad hoc. You know, oh, I've got a new post. It doesn't really fit in any of the categories that I have. Let me just add a new category. And that quickly gets kind of unwieldy. You really want your categories to align with the cornerstone concepts that you're going to be talking about. And if there are way too many of them, that may be an indication that you aren't, you know, properly categorizing your content, maybe that you don't understand it clearly enough, or not that you don't understand the content, but maybe that you don't understand the paths that you're taking your audience on and kind of the ways that you're explaining it and breaking it down for them. And so what's really good about going through this exercise with categories and creating them ahead of time is it really forces you to go back to the basics of your content strategy, which is such an important part of creating a successful site. So when you are ready to do that, go to click on the content button, and then you will find a link for post categories. So you want to click on that, and then this allows you to add new categories. So you can see right now it's just the default. You just have, there's uncategorized, and that's where the posts go by default. And so I can go in and create some categories. So I'm going to create a category called Basics. I can also choose the slug for that. And I mean, almost always, that's just going to be the same category name unless the actual name of the category is a little bit complicated or you're already using that slug for something else. And then you just very simply hit Add New Category. And if you want to have nested categories within bigger categories, you can obviously choose a parent. So I could, you know, have a basics category and then have several different subcategories beneath that if I wanted to. And you would just choose that. And if you don't choose it right away, but you realize later that you want to reorganize things, you can edit the category and edit the parent, edit the name, any of that that you want to do. And if you want to edit, just come right back to this page, scroll over the category once it's been created, click edit, and that will bring up the options for you to edit it.
Edit the uncategorized, so I rename it to news or something so that I don't have it uncategorized at all on the site.
Yep. And then you can also set up, and I didn't create slides for this, but once you go in here and edit the category, you can then edit the settings for that page. You know, the title that's on the page, the description at the top of the category page, all of that is available right there from the edit category page.
Yeah. Now, so let's just talk about that a second, because it's not on the screen, but if you edit your category, that's called an archive page, and you can actually have copy and content about that archive, and that can help your search engine traffic, because what you're doing is you're making a straight list of articles into something that's more like a content landing page. So say you've got a category which is tutorials, at the top of that you can have it say, this is my tutorials category, where you can learn about keyword, 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 and that can help your search engine traffic, because it allows you to direct people to that category and talk about that as an archive. So that can be quite powerful. What Brian did on his Boulder site is the same thing. It's like he has restaurant reviews and stuff.
Yeah,
so
let me
it's worth putting that effort in.
Yeah, and that actually would have been helpful to add into the slides here. So I'm gonna live dangerously, Chris. I'm gonna do something live here real quick, just to show an example of this. So this is on my Assembly Call site, and this is my category page. And so, for example, we do a news roundup every week, and we call it Six Banner Saturday. And so if we go and view the category page for this, you'll see that at the top of the page it has the title. I've got a description in there. I've got a description of exactly what it is. So every Saturday morning we round up, blah, blah, blah. And then I've also, you know, for people to get the full roundup, they have to be members. And so I've even got an opt-in right here, a link that takes them to where they can start their free membership, and then it rolls through all of the different pages that are tagged with this category. And so if we click right here on edit, you'll see all the different options for being able to edit this. So you got name, slug, and parent, like we showed you before. You can actually add a dynamic sidebar to this if you want a custom sidebar to it. And then you've got your headline. You can do your intro text, and it does accept HTML in here, so that's why I was able to add a link, and that's why I could do a subhead with an H4 tag. You can choose a layout, so if you do want to have a sidebar, and then you have your SEO settings as well. So you can see that I kind of combine the two titles for my SEO title, because Six Banner Saturday, very, very specific name to our site that's kind of branded around the topic, but IU basketball news roundups, that's the kind of thing someone might actually search for. So that's why I wanted to have both of those in there, even though, you know, I didn't want to complicate the category name too much. So all those different options available for you there on your category page, and I highly recommend that you take advantage of those and make sure that your category pages offer a very nice, inviting experience for people when they get there, either navigating from your site or, even better, you know, when people find them via search engines to help orient them for what kind of content is going to be there. Okay.
We'll talk more about that on the when we get more into traffic and search and things, because we'll have a dedicated session about that.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we covered that. Okay, so the way that you assign categories to posts once you have them created, very, very simple. If you want to go and add categories, like for instance this test post that I did, well, when I created it, I didn't have any categories yet, so now that I've added a category, I want to add that category here. Well, you can go and just click Quick Edit, and you don't actually have to click in all the way to the page and reload the page. And you can just, with the quick edit, you can use the quick edit options, and I can add basics to it. I click update, and now this page is automatically updated. And there's a way to do that in bulk, too, if you have questions about how to do that in bulk. We talked about that on the first or second webinar back when we worked on the default settings. The other way, of course, is that you can actually go into the page. So if you're actually working on the post itself, your categories are right over here to the right, right underneath the update, publish, and schedule button, so that you can't miss it. Make sure that you always want to make sure that you hit these categories before you publish the post. And so you just choose the category right there. You can choose multiple categories if you want to. And sometimes, you know, based on how you have things set up, you may want to choose multiple categories. Like, for example, you may have a category for basics, but you may also want to have a separate category for, you know, popular post or my best stuff. You know that this is one of your best posts and you want to keep all of those organized, so you might have that set up as categories. You can do it with tags too, but if you want, you can use multiple categories, and there are many different reasons why you may want to do so based on how you're organizing your content. And if you get here and you say, okay, I think this is a good spot for a new category, what I would say is, before you click new category and just add it, because if you do that too much, again, you run the risk of your categories getting kind of crazy, make sure that you step back, really think about it, be intentional, make sure it's how you want to organize your content, but then you can add the new category right there. You can make it a subcategory of another one, but you can do that right there from the post edit page as well.
Yeah, I recommend you have the maximum 5 to 7 categories. What you've got to remember is categories are not for your own sense of organization. They're not a filing system. They're more like aisles in a bookstore or a library. It's what people are going to be looking for on your site. So if you have too many categories, that's overwhelming. It's the, you know, paradox of choice. People end up making no choice and they go away. So what are people going to look for on your site? What are you wanting to signal to search engines that your site is about? So, you know, I have like news and tutorials and, you know, it's the sections of the site that somebody might look for. And then the tags are for cross-filing. So if you are doing a site with movie reviews, you would have science fiction, romantic comedy, that kind of thing, documentary. So think about the organization in terms of what you want to attract people to rather than how you mentally categorize it in your head.
Yep. Yeah, great, great advice, Chris. So let's talk about tags. And Chris just gave you a very great description of the difference between categories and tags, how you want to think about them, how it is best to use them. And you create tags in a very similar way to how you create categories. So go to the content menu, click on post tags, and then you, again, add the name of your tag, add the slug for your tag, click add new tag, and it goes right here into the menu. And if you need to edit the tag, you can do it the exact same way by going back in here, scrolling over, you'll find the edit button, and you can edit that tag. Chris, does the tag edit, does it give you the same options as category edit if you want to create tag pages that look like category pages?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Amelia and Brian should be able to tell me if we're wrong, but I think so. Because the tags are very similar in terms of how they're used in terms of blogging for visibility. Tags do help your search engine optimization, but again, I write for a site about 3D printing, and all the brands of 3D printers are tagged. So if somebody just wants to know about the certain printer called the Prusa, they can click on Prusa and see all the articles that have ever been done about that particular brand and skip everything else. And Brian says, yes, you do get a tag page for each tag. I thought so, because it's an archive. You know, it's the same with the categories. It's an archive of those.
Yeah, you do. I'm going live again. So if you go to your tag page, you'll also see a nice little tag cloud here that kind of tells you how often you've been using tags, which is kind of interesting, you know, as you look at just, you know, different content, how often you've talked about certain things. And I believe you can put that tag cloud on your sidebar, too, if you want to, as a content area. So, yeah, so you have that to look at when you go in here to your tags. And then, again, you click edit right there, and you'll be able to see where you edit for that tag page. Okay. Yeah. Back over here.
Kelly says too many categories on her blog showed focus was drifting. Yep. Thanks for sharing the 5 to 7. I've got a friend who went absolutely crazy with categories to the point where he was using the words education, tutorial, class, workshop, and they're all the same thing. But every time he did a new post, he created a new category because it was like in his head subtly different. So nobody knew what to click, and his sidebar became massive. And he also went crazy with tags, and it actually slowed his entire site down because the database got big. So that's another consideration.
Yep. And as Amelia says, categories are like chapters in a book, and tags are like the index at the back of the book, which is a great way to look at it and think about it. Chris, another question I wanted to address real quick. Jamar asked, are these tags related to Rainmail tags? And the answer is no.
Yeah, these are purely about organizing your blog posts, your articles. Email tags are similar in that what you're doing is adding information to the information. So it's meta. It's information about information. You're organizing it. But with the email tags, what you're doing is you're tagging the person. You're tagging the subscriber. With the blog post tags, you're tagging the content.
Yep. All righty. And then assigning tags to posts, very similar to how you assign categories to posts. So if you want to do a quick edit and add some tags to a post that is already published, click quick edit. And you can go over here. And here's what's nice about tags, because again, you're probably going to have more tags than you have categories, and sometimes you think, oh crap, let's see, this here's another post where I mentioned Steve Jobs. You know, did I just put his last name? Did I put both of his names? As you search for it, it'll come up, like tags with those that start with those similar letters will come up so that you have, it kind of gives you the options of what you've already used, which is really, really helpful because it would obviously not be fun to have to go back and look through all your tags to look for that each time. So as you start to type it in, you'll see it come up right here and you can click on it, add it, same thing, just click update and the tag will be updated and assigned to that post. And again, the same thing if you're actually in there editing the post on the post edit screen, same thing. You can start typing in your tag. You can actually choose from the most used tags if you click that link. Just click add and then update and you will be good to go.
So a really good tip from Amelia, what they see in the support desk a lot is where people use the same slug for different things. So don't have a page with the same slug as a tag because the archive will override the page. So you might have a landing page called news. If you then create a tag called news, then you're going to override that page. And Amelia says people actually use the tag blog, which means nobody can find your blog anymore. So you have to be really careful with your slugs to keep them unique, you know, and then you're not going to have that problem. So good point, Amelia.
Very nice. And then, and Catherine said, what is a slug? And so the slug is just, like when you have a URL, so remember that URL that I put at the very beginning of the presentation, rainmakerplatform.com/content-strategy, the slug there is content-strategy, right? So right here, when we define this slug, if the slug were humility, then that's what would be in the URL. So it's that little part of the URL, yeah, as Chris said, example.com/slug, like the file name part of the link. So that's what the slug is. And on individual posts, you can edit the slug for each individual post and page. It's right there underneath the subject line. You can actually edit that. Okay, let's talk comments and other content settings, because comments, this is a big decision. If you are going to allow comments on your posts, on your pages, again, this goes back to your content strategy, to your blog strategy. So you really want to think about that. Do you want people to be able to comment on posts? Obviously, there are positives to that. You get activity. It's a great way to learn from your audience. It's a great way to see what concepts are hitting, what concepts aren't, what people are interested in, what they want more of. So the benefits of comments are pretty clear to see, but you also need to remember that there are costs of comments. There is the cost of the time to moderate the comments. You probably are going to want to go in and respond to comments if you're having them. That encourages people to continue commenting. So you just want to make sure that if you're going to tacitly agree to that investment of time, that there is a real reason behind why you're doing it. I think when you're beginning a site, you definitely almost surely want to have comments. And you know, as your site gets a little bit more mature, maybe you're having 50 to 100 comments on each one. That can definitely be a good thing, but if you're also having to go in and moderate a lot and respond to a lot of comments, you may say, this isn't worth the time. So,
yeah. And there's the reverse of that as well. There's the opposite problem where you don't get any comments, and that's negative social proof, because it's like if you're inviting people to comment and nobody's commenting, and no matter what you do, nobody adds a comment, then it looks like it's an unpopular blog. And I actually found that with my Nerdy Maker Hacks site. I've got 4,000 Facebook group members, but nobody was commenting on the article, so I turned comments off and just send people to the Facebook group now.
Yep. So when you make that decision and you want to decide what you're going to do with comments, you want to go to your content settings. And so the way that you get to your content settings, as with all settings, is the little settings gear. Click comment. And then this will take you to these global comment settings. And right up here at the top, that is where you will find the comment settings. And so you can choose the defaults here. If you want to enable comments on posts, if you want to enable comments on pages, and if you want to enable comments on protected content. So say a page in your learning management system or some page that is behind a membership wall that not just everybody can get to. They have to log in to get to that. You choose your defaults right here. Now, The other thing to remember is, just as we talked about before with sidebars, you can override the default on individual posts if you want to. So one thing that you want to do if you're thinking about comments, and certainly if you're going to add comments to your site, is there's a little button up here. It's a gray button, so it can be easy to miss. But when you're in there editing a post, for admin screen options, click that button, and it will bring up some different options for what you want to show on the screen and what you don't want to show on the screen. And that means right here in the edit post page. So all these little widgets, you know, the publish widget, obviously that's an important one to keep, but you know, you could turn categories off if you didn't want to see it right here. Now you probably do, so it's on by default, but you have all these different options. You know, maybe you just want to declutter this page, or there's something that you're never using, you can remove it. But comments and discussion, if you're going to be having comments, then you probably want both of these checked. So you check this one, you check this one, and then those will both show up. And as you scroll down, you'll see these little content areas right here. So one is for discussion, and it will give you the option to allow comments or disallow them. So if your default is to allow comments, this will be checked. But say that you're doing just kind of an admin announcement, and you don't necessarily want people to be able to comment, there's no reason for people to comment, you could just turn comments off for that post without changing the default for all of the other ones. And as people leave comments, all the comments will actually show up right here. So you can see the comments, you can respond to them, you can add a comment yourself if you want to. You'll have both of those options right here in the post edit page. And then other content settings. So if we go back to settings, content, there's some other content settings to be aware of. I'm not going to go through all of them because they're not all relevant for this session, but we talked about the content archives earlier. And content archives, this is for archive pages, author pages, category pages, search and tag types. You can define what shows on those pages. So you can display the entry content. I believe you can choose to do the excerpt as well. There are a couple different options there. You can choose to limit the content to a certain amount of characters. You can add a featured image. You can add entry pagination. So before, when I showed you my page for the news roundups, and you scroll down and you saw all the different posts there one by one, this allows you to define what is shown for each of those entries.
Yeah, and the pagination as numeric, that is good for search engines because search engines can't click next and previous. They just follow links, right? So if you have numerical pagination, it allows search engines to index all of those pages instead of having to keep returning to the next and previous buttons.
Yep. Carol asked about comment spam. I don't have that page on here, but you can manage comments and define a comment as spam. Rainmaker does a pretty good job of kind of managing those on their own, but you can help train it and make sure that no spam comments get through. There's a little link for spam when you go up here to manage comments.
You can set the rules for that as well, so they don't just appear on the site. You have to moderate them.
Yep. And then you've got content optimization. You can choose what permissions people need to be able to use the content optimization tools of Rainmaker. You can make sure that you have your homepage SEO as you want it. So, you know, what your title template is, what's in your meta description. And then you can also go in and define 404 pages. And again, not going to get into the details of those right now. The knowledge base does provide excellent insight on all of them. But that is where you get to all those, is from your content settings. And those are important things to think about before you're going to start publishing content on your blog. All right, let's move on to social sharing buttons. Because as you get content out there, you want to have some social sharing options on the page to subtly suggest to people that if they liked the post, that they share it with their network. And people are just kind of used to that now. You know, when we read a piece of content and we like it and we want to share it, we immediately go looking for those social sharing buttons to make it nice and easy on us when we're on a page. And so let's talk quickly how to do that, because Rainmaker makes it very easy. So if you go to the settings gear icon and click traffic, that will take you to the settings for sharing icons. And so to begin, you want to just set the rules for the icon. So you can choose the icon size, and you can choose from a small bar, medium bar, or box. Choose the icon appearance, where it is outlined or filled. You can then decide if you want the icons to be displayed before the content, after the content, or both, before and after, and then you can enable your social sharing buttons on the different types of content that you'll have. So posts, pages, attachments, portfolios, books, all the way to podcasts and archive pages. You can decide where you want your social sharing icons to be. You know, for example, if you have a public forum, you may want your forum post to be able to be shared. But if it's a forum that's behind a membership wall, then maybe you don't necessarily want to be suggesting that people share those, because then when people who come to the forum who aren't members, they're not going to be able to log in, and that can create a confusing experience. So you just kind of want to think these things through for where you're going to add your social sharing buttons and then not have them. And then as you scroll down on this page, then you can activate and position the different social networks. So you have these six options, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and StumbleUpon. I always use Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and then it just kind of depends on the site and the type of content whether I use the other ones. But for the Twitter one, you can actually add in your Twitter handle, so that will be added to the default tweet text. And then for Pinterest, if you are going to use Pinterest, you can enter the default image URL, so that way if there's no image available when people share the content, there's something there by default. You know, maybe your company logo or just a generic image that you'd be fine putting there on Pinterest. So choosing those, that'll determine which ones show up on the site. And then you can also, there's a print button by default, so that if people want to print your content, they can. And if you want to disable that print button, just put the check mark right here, and that print button will no longer show up on your site. And then here's just an example of what it looks like. So I chose those three social sites to display. And so there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's LinkedIn, all right there at the top of the page. And I also have them at the bottom of the page right there. And so they're all right there, nice and easy, conveniently located for people who read the content and want to share the content.
Yeah. And so just a note about those social buttons. Putting your Twitter @name into the settings is really important for two reasons. One, when somebody tweets, you'll get to know, because Twitter will inform you, and so you can thank them, which is reinforcing the positive behavior. It's a nice thing to do, you know, it's polite. But also, it's more social proof and more people getting to see your @name, because that's how you're going to grow your Twitter account. The more people see that you're creating good stuff, the more people might want to follow you. So it's a good thing to put that in there. And don't overlook things like Pinterest. If you've got visual content, or if you've even just got really good featured images or really good images on your site, it's amazing how many people use Pinterest now. It's a really big social network. So on my site, I do 3D designs and 3D printing. It's amazing how many people pin those. So it's a really good thing to get into and to check out. The demographics are very different on Pinterest. So your audience may or may not be represented, but it's worth checking out.
Yep. Yeah. Excellent advice, Chris. All right. So let's move on to our last section for this session, which is basic pages that you want to consider having as you get set up and as you get ready to start publishing content. So the About page, we talked about this in a previous session, so I'm not going to go into it too much, but you can look at that previous session, and I'll just reiterate these links, which provide excellent insight on creating a great About page. So you've got rainmakerplatform.com/go/about1, and then you've also got rainmakerplatform.com/go/about2 for these two articles by Sonia and Leanne, Are You Making These 7 Mistakes with Your About Page, and the 5-Step Process for Writing an About Page That Connects and Converts. Highly recommend that you have your About page ready to roll when you start publishing content. Some other pages to keep in mind then. One is a subscribe page. So obviously you're going to want to have your opt-in in your sidebar, in your after entry widget, as we talked about. But having a specific page dedicated for subscriptions is also very important. You know, for example, you know, if you go to assemblycall.com right now, you know, we do some different things with pop-ups, and we've got it in widgets and that kind of thing. But when we first started, we very simply had a page, assemblycall.com/subscribe, that outlined all the benefits of subscribing with an opt-in page. I was able to link to it right there in the navigation bar, and that drove tons of signups for us for a while, until we started to get a little bit more sophisticated and take the next steps with our conversion strategies. But just having a subscribe page, it also makes it very nice and easy for if you're ever being interviewed somewhere on a podcast, you know, and people ask, hey, where can we get more? Hey, go to assemblycall.com/subscribe. Check it out. That's how you get our best content. So it gives people a nice, easy place to go. And it's just nice and easy to get set up so that you have it there for as you go forward publishing content. You also, a good idea is to have a resources page. And Chris, do you want to talk about what your thought process was for your site, MakerHacks, setting up your resources page?
So back in the day when I started blogging, people used to create websites that were pretty much just a set of links. And then that trend went away and people moved more towards articles. But that roundup page always stuck with me. And then I was talking to Pat Flynn, and it turned out that the majority of his affiliate income was coming from these resource pages. And talked to Darren Rouse and his photography resource page that he had. I don't know if he still has it, but that was doing the same thing. And in conversations, people are always asking me what tools I use, what printers I have, and you know, what do I recommend. So if you come at it from different angles, there's lots of different reasons to have a resource page. So it might be just things that you recommend. It could be things that you use. It could be things that you're asked about a lot. On a blog, even just, you know, who do you use for domain registrations? Who do you use for hosting? What software do you use? For Rafael, people are always asking him, do you use Photoshop or do you use something else? And he's tried different design tools. So it's a useful resource on its own. It's good for search because you're going to constantly be linking to it and referring people to it and sharing it. And it's good for your visitors because it gives people a central place to look at what you use. And so there are various reasons to have one, and you can just grow it incrementally. You don't have to have this fully formed thing from day one. So you know, I'm adding to mine. I might reorganize it, but I started off with a straight bullet list, and then I've expanded the descriptions. I've added a video in there. You know, you can grow it over time. It doesn't have to start as this wonderful thing. But because it's linked from my header navigation, it means it's linked from most of the pages on the site. I link to it from within articles. That means it's getting more search attention. It's getting more prominent in search.
Kelly asked, if you have an opt-in page, do you need a subscribe page going back here? It's a good question, Kelly, and you could have both, really. I mean, it depends on how you're using it. So, you know, for your subscribe page could be subscribed to your email list, but let's say that you also have a podcast. You may want to put on your subscribe page lots of different ways to subscribe to your content. It could even be a place to add your social media links, you know, because there's lots of different ways that people can subscribe and lots of different ways that people think about subscription. You know, I've always, on any subscribe page, the first subscription I always want is email. So that's always the one that I feature the most prominently, even if I'm adding some other options there. You know, opt-in, most people are going to take that as kind of a more specific request, as in, you know, opt-in via email to get updates or to get on your newsletter. So the expectations for people are probably going to be a little bit more specific there. Subscribe, people can come to a page like that with a little bit more varied interest, and you can probably add a few more different things there. So, again, it's going to go back to your strategy.
It's going to be an easy call to action for you. So, like, if you don't have an opt-in form on your About page, link to the Subscribe page. You can have a pinned post in your Twitter account that goes to your Subscribe page. You can have a pinned post on your Facebook page that goes to your Subscribe page. So wherever people find you, one of the first things they see is a link to the subscription and why they would care, why they would bother, what's in it for them. So it's a really easy and simple thing to do to get more subscriptions. But if you're interviewed, you can say example.com/subscribe to find out more, right? So it's just a ready call to action that you always have in your pocket.
Yep, so we talked about subscribe, we talked about resources. Services would be another one, Chris, and this is an example from your page, chrisg.com, which not everybody may need, but certainly could be very useful for someone who has different services that they're offering.
Yeah, and since I changed to work with Rainmaker Digital, my products and services has gone down to just these things that I haven't updated in a while. But I used to have a really big services page because I used to do a lot of consulting and coaching. But on your site, what you would need to do is A, remind people that you're in business, and whatever the business you're in, remind people of that. And you need a place to link to. And again, like the subscribe page, it's an easy call to action to have. So give it a slug that's easy to read out over the telephone or in an interview, so /services or /products, and link to it from everywhere. So in an article on your site, and you can say, one of my clients was talking to me, you can say, around clients, that's a link. You can go to your services page. You can say, if you want more information about this, check out my services, in the emails, in your autoresponder sequence. And if you do a guest post, it's something you can link to from your author bio. So don't overlook any opportunity to link back to the fact that you've got products and services and that people might want to check them out, because they will.
Yep. And then landing pages. And obviously, we will have future sessions on landing pages. And I think it's really important with landing pages, you know, the pages that we just talked about, subscribe page, resources page, services page, those are landing pages, right? They have a very specific purpose. You know, they're giving people calls to action on those pages. But it's important with landing pages to remember to think about all pages as landing pages. And Chris made this point earlier. You know, when people search for something and they come to your site via Google, that, you know, maybe it's a blog post, but that's still a landing page. They've landed on that page, and you should have a goal for that page that you want people to achieve. You know, maybe it's a blog post, and so your goal is that you want people to read and comment. That's fine, you know, but that post is still a landing page. So I would think about all pages in terms of landing pages and what your goal is for that specific page. And, you know, again, we talk about design. Obviously, Rainmaker has a landing page tools in there. We also mentioned on the last session about the visual page builder, which you can get to from Rainmaker Labs. So make sure that you have Labs activated and then go in and activate the visual page builder. But that is a new tool that we are continuing to work on. I'm not going to get into it in detail here, but we will have a future session on it. But that will help you designing your pages visually and just give you some more flexibility in how you're designing them. All righty. Chris, anything else before we wrap up this session?
No, we'll get more into it when we get into the next webinar. This was basically setting up your blog, and the next webinar will be about moving towards using your blog for your business goals, and the main one will be getting that retention going and getting people to subscribe.
Yep. So coming up next week, we're going to have another Q&A, and I have to tell you, I'm really loving this format. I hope that you all are too, with doing the webinar and then being able to answer the questions, because there were a lot of questions. I know we weren't able to get to all of them. We got to some of them, we weren't able to get to all of them. But next week we'll have that Q&A. It's going to be Thursday, March 16th at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, and I believe we have the link. And one of the things that we want to start doing right now, Amelia or Kelton, anybody, if you want to post that link to everybody. Yeah, if you're here right now, we want to give you the first opportunity to get your questions in, because even on the Q&A, so many questions come in that we can't get to all of them. But as I'm putting those together, the two things I'm always thinking about is prioritizing the first questions that come in first, but then, you know, trying where I can to group questions together into composites if several different questions cover the same topic. So the quicker that you get those in, the better the chance that we'll actually be able to address it. And as you've seen, if you've been on those, you know, we don't, for as many questions as we can, we don't just pop the question up there and give you and talk over that slide for 5 to 10 minutes. We really try and make these tutorials and show you with some different screenshots and step-by-steps how to do things. So the earlier that you can get those in, the better. It gives us more time to prepare. And since you're here on the live session, we want to give you dibs. And then following that, as Chris mentioned, we will be taking what we talked about today and going to the next step and talking about how you use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. So you've got people there on your site now from, you know, how you're using images and featured images to how you're actually setting up your different opt-in widgets and many different ways that you can use Rainmaker to turn your traffic into subscribers, because that is the ultimate goal as we look to build our audiences that will eventually help us build our businesses. We are over time. Chris, are there any other questions in there that we wanted to address real quick before we have to bounce out of here?
I think we covered everything that we can get to today. Okay. And there's that question. We've done the link for the next Q&A. So real quick, where do you find the replays? We have a page for all the replays up on rainmakerplatform.com webinars. Is that correct?
I believe so. I'm double checking right now, and I'll put the link in there.
It's not on
webinars. It's a
site building roadmap. Sorry about that.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yep. So those are added there. And every Friday, typically the way that we've been doing it is on Friday, we'll send out the email for the next session. And we've typically always had the replays ready by then. And so we're including the link in that email. So sometimes they're posted before then, but certainly our goal, and Tim and Kelton and the guys do an awesome job of getting those posted quickly. But almost always by Friday, they're up there, and we include them in that email that we send out. But sometimes they are available sooner, and they will be right there at that link, site-building-roadmap. All righty. Excellent. Well, Chris, thank you for your insight on this session. Appreciate it.
Thank you for running it.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody who is here. We look forward to answering your questions on next week's Q&A. Until then, have a great time and a productive time building your Rainmaker sites, and we will talk to you next week.